My name is Jill Glazier. I'm 27 years old. Today is May 9th, 2014. We are in Camden, Maine, and I'm here with a new friend that I just met today.
And my name is Abby Norman. I'm 23 years old. Today is May 9th, 2014. We're in Camden, Maine at the library, and I am here with my new friend that I just made.
Abby, I know that you came to talk a little bit today about a health issue that you went through. Do you just want to start at the beginning? What happened?
Yeah. Just to give some context, I moved to New York after I graduated high school in 2009, and I was attending Sarah Lawrence College. I wanted to either be a dancer or an actor or, I don't know, an artist. And so, you know, I had had an interesting adolescence, I guess. I just to give the background in terms of sort of where I was at that point in my life, I had become an emancipated minor when I was 16. And I had lived on my own for quite a long time. I had a lot of people in and out of my life. I had a lot of friends. But I didn't really have a home base. So for me, leaving school and starting, you know, a life in another state was a huge deal. And I had no intention of ever coming back to Maine. So I got there. I loved it. It was everything I dreamed it would be. And about 2 months into my sophomore year, I woke up one morning and I was in the shower and I just remember absolutely excruciating abdominal pain. And I thought I had a pretty high pain tolerance. I danced, so I, you know, I could stand to be hurt. I could push through it. And I was also, and I am still kind of a type A personality. So I was like, well, I'm still going to go to class. But I tried to get out of the shower. And I literally just kind of collapsed onto the floor. And I was just overcome by how sick I felt. But I was really terrified of admitting, I think, that something could be wrong. Because since I had come from this particular socioeconomic situation, I was there on a pretty much a full scholarship. And I'll say that now because I didn't really talk about it at the time. But I think now pretty much everybody I went to school with there knows that. But so for me to be there was huge. And to think that it was going to go away or that something would threaten that, I couldn't even put that in my mind. I just wanted it so much. So I kind of stumbled out of the bathroom, and my roommate, who's still one of my best friends, kind of gave me this look like, ooh, that's yuck. Like, what is wrong with you? And I kind of brushed her off, and I was like, no, but it'd be okay, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I kind of pushed through and went to class, and I was going to work that night, and I just couldn't focus. All I could think about was how much pain I was in, and gradually it became more than that. It was nausea and dizziness, and I mean, I was just like, this is not, like, I'm not sick. Like, something is really wrong. And so I had her go to the emergency room with me. And I had this feeling in my head. I thought, I think this is going to be appendicitis. I think that's what it is. And I, you know, always had kind of a science geek background. And I've always been kind of passively interested in medicine. So I was pretty confident that I might know what was going on. I got to the emergency room and I think sometimes young women especially get pigeonholed into certain diagnoses. So I spent several hours there being battered about my sexual behavior, which was, and I will say, non-existent. I was going to Sarah Lawrence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was just saying to this doctor, and I remember being like, can you just do a CT scan? Like, I just really think that I have appendicitis. And he said, well, this isn't what appendicitis usually looks like. And I said, look, I have pain in my right lower quadrant and I'm going to like throw up on you. I really don't know why this is a hard diagnosis to make. And of course, I didn't really have context to understand why it was difficult. But the long story short is he sent me home with an antibiotic and told me I had a kidney infection. And I said, well, okay. I mean, who was I to say otherwise? It didn't sit right with me deep down, but I mean, I was basically 19. So I had, you know, because I'd been emancipated, it wasn't like they were going to call my parents and talk to them. I was uninsured, which I'm sure made a huge difference in the quality of the care that I received. So I went home and I went back to my room with my roommate, who at that point thought I was going to probably like die because I just looked awful. And I couldn't go to class that whole next week. And that for me was, I don't think I'd missed a day of class in the year and a half I'd been there. I was extremely dedicated to my studies.
You knew everything. You were sick if you were missing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I knew that it was not in my head. And so basically a week went by. I didn't go to class. I got sick. I couldn't eat or drink. I started to lose weight. I was very dehydrated. And I went back into the hospital the following weekend. And at that point, I mean, all hell broke loose. And I remember lying in the emergency room just out of my mind. I remember very little about that particular hospitalization, but I do remember that a different doctor came in, another male doctor, and he sat down on the gurney and he said, "When did you realize that it was this bad?" And I remember like rolling over and looking at him and saying, "All I have done for the last 3 days is lie in bed and watch Barbra Streisand movies." And he just looks at me and he's like, "That is serious, you know, wow, that's pretty bad." And, you know, and that was kind of the only funny thing about it. And that was the last time I laughed about anything for a very long time. Basically, what happened after that was I couldn't stay at school. They really hadn't figured out at that point why I was sick. They suspected that I probably had like an ovarian cyst, something like that, a lady problem, mm-hmm. as they like to put it. And I was willing to accept it could be anything at that point. I just knew that I was progressively getting a lot sicker. And I was concerned about going home, as they said, because I thought, well, where is that? You know, I had specifically left to come there because I didn't really know where I belonged anywhere else. So for that, it was easy for the administration to say, go home on medical leave until you get better. And for me to be like, so I'm going to couch surf and I'm this sick. And basically that's what I did. Actually, my father did come to New York to get me, which was good. I think he was pretty surprised at how sick I was. I think a lot of people were. And by the time I got back to Maine and kind of settled in, stayed with a lot of friends, couched around, I was sick. I was really sick. But I was really fortunate that the people who had been there for me during those really tumultuous years of trying to figure out where I belonged, they came through for me in a really big way. And so this went on, this visiting doctors, trying to figure out what the problem was, went on all in all for 3 years.
3 years?
Yeah.
That's incredible to hear that. And also when you're talking about how you were treated by the healthcare people, saying that, making all these assumptions about you because you're a woman, I mean, that must have been incredibly disheartening.
It was. And actually one of the things that, the anecdote that comes to mind, which I tell people when I tell this story, is one of the male physicians that I saw once I came back from New York during this process, this diagnostic odyssey, said to me in a meeting that we had to talk about what else we could do, that maybe there wasn't anything else. And I remember him saying to me, "You know, I'm just looking at your social history, and you've had a pretty hard life. You had a hard childhood. You had a hard adolescence. My theory is that you were probably molested or raped at some point in your life, and this is just your body's way of trying to work it out." And I just remember looking at him and saying, "I don't think my appendix is the seat of my emotional discomfort." Like that, I mean, for all I know, you know, anything's possible. But I remember being so just, I couldn't even I couldn't even really conceptualize that that's what he was saying at that point to me. And after that, what was his recommendation? Like, and this is a thing. There is a thing that it's like vaginal physical therapy. And he thought that that would help. And I was like, so I have this terrible abdominal pain. I can't eat. At that point, I had lost 30 pounds in the span of about 3 months. I was really, really sick. And, I was like, I really don't think this is emotional. I don't think this is in my head. I don't think it's psychology. I mean, sure, that's there. And yeah, I think I've struggled some, but I think because I've had all of that adversity in my life, it makes me far more independent and sure of myself than a lot of people my age. Maybe people in general, I don't know. But I mean, for somebody to say that to me just felt like that this is the end. And I actually didn't see more doctors for quite a while after that. I kind of gave up. I didn't stop being sick. And slowly my circle of friends and acquaintances started to drift away because it's hard to be around somebody who's sick all the time. And I tried really hard not to be a downer, but my physical state just continued to be not what you would expect out of a young 20-year-old woman. So throughout all this, I ended up moving into this community, which is a place that I have always wanted to live in because, as I'm sure you've noticed, it's very beautiful. And there was a time when I didn't know what was going on where I thought, if this is something awful, if this is something like cancer or something that might kill me, and I don't really have a community, I don't have my peeps, you know, like I don't have my surrounded, you know, group of people. Like I want to be somewhere that is just going to envelop me. And I think that this community, because it's kind of, you know, they say that where the mountains meet the sea, you've got, it's like a little nest of nature. And I think that I just was drawn to that. And it was interesting because then I came here and I was still quite sick, got a little apartment, met a young man who I was with for the last 2 years of this journey. We have since separated, but it was through him and my relationship with him that I really realized the damage that this was causing my body. I was really unable to have a sexual relationship the way that I wanted to, which was devastating because that is such a gift of the human experience. And when you have somebody in your life that you love and that you are so thrilled to know and to have in your life, and they can give to you physically, emotionally, spiritually, and you can't do that back because of some physical ailment that is not because of like psychology or, you know, anything that you have in your mind that's preventing you, but you just legitimately have a physical problem, whatever it is, that's the most frustrating, depressing place you can ever be in. And so taking all of this information back to doctors and saying, I have an even bigger list of symptoms now. This is taking everything in my life away from me, literally. It had taken my enjoyment of food. It had taken sex. It had taken dance, physical activity. I couldn't sleep at night. I couldn't concentrate. I was able to still, somehow, I could work a little bit out of necessity because obviously I was not sitting on an enormous savings at that point. And so then there was a little bit of a rekindling of interest. And so actually almost a year ago to the day, it was, like May 2nd of last year, I ended up having some surgery, and there had been this physician who I'd worked with a couple of times for other things. He was a general surgeon, fantastic guy, really great. And now I had had a mix of female and male doctors. And yes, I think it's true that the male doctors did tend to look at me and say, you got young lady problems. But there were plenty of women who did it too, particularly gynecologists, which makes sense, I think, because that's probably where they are focused. But I think it's important to note that I think it's something that exists in the medical literature, and it's not even so much a gender thing when it comes to physicians. I think female physicians fall into the trap just as often as male physicians do. So I had talked to him about this, and I have this enormous medical record, and I got all of it. I mean, I wanted to know, and I went back through it with him, and I said, when I was in New York, that first weekend that I was sick, they did a CT scan, and it showed like an early appendicitis. Why they didn't treat it, I have no idea, and I have never gotten any closure about that. But I think now, in retrospect, and with the little medical training I have now, I think one of the things that happened was, and he kind of agreed, that because I had had a really strong antibiotic, it had started to wall off the infective process that was happening. So I'm telling him all this. And as you can imagine, here I am, and I'm only 23 now. So when this happened, I was like 21. And I'm sitting in this office with this very, very highly respected surgeon. And I'm showing him all this information. I'm showing him the research. I am pulling out article after article that says chronic appendicitis is a thing. And I think that this is what's wrong with me. And I'm not trying to tell you how to do your job, but I have been sick for 3 years. You know, I thought I was going to come home from Sarah Lawrence for a few months and go home after Christmas. I never went back. I never got back. My life completely changed because of this. My body has changed. My goals have changed. My ability to appreciate life has changed. My entire paradigm shifted because of this. And I just want to know why. I just want to know what this is. And I remember him looking at me, and he kind of like leaned back in his chair, and he was like, okay, we'll go in. We'll look around. You are either brilliant or you are the most educated hypochondriac I have ever met. And this surgery will tell us what the answer to that is. Mm-hmm. And he had said, you know, we'll go in. And even if it's not your appendix, let's just take it out. He said, I think that's justified, because otherwise you're just going to worry about it. Because it is funny that that pain is exactly where your appendix is all the time. Isn't that funny? Isn't that odd? Well, okay, I guess it could be referred pain, but it is funny that it is exactly where your appendix is. So within a couple of weeks, I went in, and it was going to be pretty easy. It was like a day surgery, pretty much. And I just remember, you know, looking at my boyfriend at the time and being like, you know, I know that this is it, because if it's not that, then this is probably never going to get better. And at that point, we had had some struggle in our relationship. And I think for me that this outcome of the surgery held a lot more for me than just my own body and the fate of my pain and my experience with the pain, but also probably was going to define all the relationships I had. And so before I could really even get my thought out, the sedative kicked in. And then I remember I woke up in recovery, and there was this lovely male nurse who was feeding me ice chips. And I was like, blah, 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 you know, and I was like, what was it? And I actually remember, as he was turning to me, I could feel in my body, as I was coming out of anesthesia, that they had taken something out. I didn't know what, but I actually felt the absence of what I perceived to be that thing that was in my body that was keeping me sick, that was giving me such excruciating pain. And he just looked at me and he said, it was your appendix. And so in the aftermath of that, we got to kind of look at this. And basically what had happened was that I had had appendicitis, and it had become chronic. It had continued, my body had walled off the infection, created adhesions. I should have brought the picture. I have this picture of it from when it went to pathology. And I think the only word for it is gnarly. And I know, because like an ex-boyfriend of mine saw this picture. I think I put it on like Instagram or something, and he was just like, that is literally the gnarliest thing I've ever seen. And it really was. And it was, just you look at it and you go, yeah, you don't want that in your body. And what was incredible to me was that as much damage as it managed to do, and as much as I still, a year after it was taken out, have problems and may always have digestive problems and referred pain and fatigue and just a general body not at top notch kind of thing, the fact that my body was able to live with that infection for 3 years that every day that I got up and like cursed at my body because I couldn't do the things I wanted to do and because I felt sick, that really what was happening was that it was surviving. It was taking incredible steps and creating this really interesting case study of, you know, what a body is capable of when it's faced with a really massive infection that goes untreated. And so coming out of that, I just was able to have this appreciation for my body that I'm not sure everybody gets to experience in their life, unless you have something like this that really shows you how much happens that you don't control. And maybe some people would chalk it up to like spiritual intervention and, you know, all these other things. But all I could do was be completely fascinated by my body. And so, like I said before, I am at heart a geek and I always did have an interest in medicine. And so when it became apparent to me that I really was not going to be able to sustain any type of dance or theatrical career or anything like that just because of my body's state, I wanted to go into medicine. I wanted, because I had lived in that world and I actually found that I liked it. I really did. I liked the mystery, but I also liked the, you know, sort of the way that medicine tells stories. And so I ended up working in medical records for a couple of years while I was, you know, sort of trying to get through this. And I got to experience how our bodies tell our stories for everybody. I mean, you know, because you go through, you know, when you have to process records, you know, you never meet these people. You just know them in black and white and you know what they've been through. And I know that somewhere I am in black and white in a case study somewhere, and that somebody will look at that and be like, you know, God, that body went through some shit. And, but what I really wanted to do at the heart of all of that was take this and tell the story and have the education and the background and the licensure and whatever I needed to be able to help other people. Because I realize now, because I've been in medicine for a few years, that if I could tell people one thing that they need to know, it's that you need to be your own advocate. And I learned that the hard way. Medicine has come a long way. Healthcare is coming a long way. It's got a long way to go, and it needs reform, and we're working on it really hard. And people like me who are involved in initiatives to do the patient-centered medical home, that's something that people hear about, to make it a patient focus, to let the patient and the physician make decisions, to make decisions for patients based on their goals and their lifestyle, what's really possible. And I think that, you know, that's kind of what, in a weird, really roundabout way, like what this all led me to.
My reaction to your story, when I've been listening to it, the whole time I felt two ways. I felt very angry for you. I think just hearing the story about how you were treated makes me feel very angry. And then also pretty amazed, too, that you were able to make it through it and that you were able to step up to the plate and say, this is what I need. And we need to do something about it. I mean, especially because you're such a young person, you know, to be able to stand up for yourself. But I'm curious about, you talked a little bit about this, but maybe a little bit more about your emotional state during these 3 years, because I'm feeling angry just hearing the story.
Yeah, I will tell you that I don't want to say that it caused a depression, because I suspect that just having sort of a unusual childhood, adolescent experience, there was probably always a level of, you know, wow, shit's hard. You know, I think I was always probably a little prone to it. This experience, for that 3 years, really was the tipping point for me. I was extremely depressed. I couldn't understand why it felt like every time I would tell somebody, look, put your hand on my stomach right here and feel it and press on it. How are you not sensing that there's something wrong here? You know, it was just incredibly frustrating to have them always be like, well, it's probably your ovary. Maybe it's your uterus. maybe it's like IBS, you know? And I was like, good, fine. It could be any of those things. But what, can you just confirm it for me? Can you tell me it's not in my head? Can you stop looking at me like I'm a hypochondriac or like I'm a liar or like I'm sad? And like, I just remember in a lot of my notes when I was going back through my record, because of course I requested like every record of everything, there was always this thing of like, you know, she gets upset, she becomes tearful. Well, yeah, I did. There were plenty of times when I cried, when I sat there and I showed them this research and I spent hours. I mean, what else was I going to do? I was mostly either confined to my bed or, you know, kind of limited in what I could do, but I wanted to stay. I mean, and this is like, you know, why I went to that college in the first place is I'm very intellectually intense and I want to know everything about everything. And so for something mysterious to be happening in my body, the only way that I stayed alive and stayed on top of my emotions and did not let that take me down to a potentially fatal place was by learning everything that I could. And I think that my understanding of anatomy and physiology and of the connection between the mind and the gut, which is a real thing, you know, it probably saved my life. I remember many, many times lying in bed for days, not seeing another human being for weeks, except my therapist, who I managed to crawl out of bed to see. She might have been the only person I would see and talk to for a week or two at a time. And I remember thinking, you know, what if I do die? What if nobody finds me? What if I die tonight and nobody, you know? And of course, then of course, in my like medical brain, I was going, well, they'd figure it out if they did an autopsy. But like, there was this real, actual, very visceral fear, mm-hmm. because I was kind of isolated.
Did you feel lonely?
I did. I was lonely, but I was also kind of ashamed. I didn't want really to be around anybody because I felt like such a huge burden. I felt like people didn't really feel comfortable being around me because I didn't look good. Although ironically, I remember making my like trip to the pharmacy once. And this was when I had gotten back from New York. And so people I went to high school with hadn't probably seen me for 2 or 3 years. And I had lost an enormous amount of weight. I was gaunt. I was very, very sick looking. I had bags under my eyes and my skin was really pale and I was kind of shaky and not steady on my feet. And I just remember this girl I went to high school with saw me at the pharmacy and said, "Wow, you look great. You've lost so much weight. What did you do?" Brother. And I just looked at her and was like, you know, I'm really sick and I potentially might be dying and nobody can figure it out.
Yeah, would you like the pain that I'm going
through? Yeah, like, do you know why I'm at this pharmacy? Because I have to get medication so that I can, like, not vomit and, you know, can sleep through the night and not be completely worn down by pain and nausea. I mean, to be in pain so much that you get nauseated is, like, I don't wish that on anybody. I think that's, like, the worst thing. I think about it now and I think how lucky I feel that although the pain is gone for me now. I mean, they took that out and the pain went away. Now, there are some residual things. I guess you would call it like an like irritable bowel type thing for sure. And I still have chronic nausea, which I take medication for. But I manage it. My energy is better. I can actually eat enough to like not, you know, not function. So that for me is a huge improvement. And I remember at my post-op appointment, the doctor saying to me, you know, I don't really know what will come of this. We might have taken it out and maybe you'll be totally fine, but you had a lot of adhesions. You had a lot of, you know, this appendix was really infected and inflamed. It had inflamed surrounding tissue and you might not ever feel better completely. You might always feel off. It was a pretty big deal. And I know that because of how it was situated, had it ruptured at any point, I probably would have died. Or at the very least, I would have lost a very large portion of my intestine. So the fact that it didn't, I say, okay, fine. I'm alive. You know, I still don't feel great all the time, but it didn't kill me. You know, not that it necessarily made me stronger, because I'm still kind of like not as steady on my feet as I'd like to be. Don't have the muscle mass I had when I danced, but I can work and I can write and I can live my life. And someday there'll probably be another gentleman caller or two.
Well, so. It sounds like it shifted your priorities, what you think is important, both in maybe your life and your career.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that it really opened my eyes to just an enormous need in this country and the way that our healthcare system works. I think that in some ways I always kind of wanted to go into medicine, but I maybe thought, well, actually, I think I know exactly why. I was not good at math. And I had plenty of times in my life where people said, you're a girl, you don't need to be good at math, you know, and that attitude made me feel like the math science careers, I wasn't entitled to that, regardless of how much I might have been interested in it. So actually, in some ways, when I look at my career now, and I look at the opportunities I've had to write, especially about health and medicine, about healthcare, the things that I've been able to research, the initiatives that I've been part of, the people that I've met, the people that I feel like maybe I've helped or that I might be helping. I mean, I think that just solidifies for me that I made the right decision and that actually that experience might have been the best thing that ever happened to me in a way.
That's really incredible that you could come out of it feeling that way. I can't even imagine that. So can you talk a little bit about the work you do now? What are you doing, and describe it a little bit?
Well, it's really kind of a new thing, but we're really excited about it. So there are about 19 hospitals in the United States that are part of something called the High Value Healthcare Collaborative. And they give grant money to hospitals. It comes from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. So hospitals get this money, and basically, to distill it, it's a pretty big process, but to distill it down into the essentials, what they want to do is they want to have people in physician practices, in hospitals, in the healthcare setting, who can act as facilitators between physicians and patients. And the idea is that physicians and nurses should be able to work to the top of their licensure. And a lot of times that, you know, now we're getting focused on the patient-centered aspect of healthcare, it's very difficult for physicians and nurses to do that because they have so many clinical responsibilities. So wouldn't it be nice if there were educators, if there were people who were trained to do, not unlike what you do here when you interview somebody about who they are, what their values are, what their story is. So that's kind of like what we're able to do. And right now I'm working as support for an RN who is a health coach. And so a lot of what I can do for her is to facilitate follow-up for patients and getting them connected with resources in the community. We're working with diabetes patients. There's also initiatives that are part of this collaborative that have to do with congestive heart failure, spinal stenosis. I mean, just the whole gamut of what would be considered high-risk patients, particularly people who have multiple comorbidities, so people who are diabetic but also have all this other stuff that they're trying to manage. And some of that could be depression. It could be high blood pressure. It's really hard when you're sick. And I know this, and I think this is one of the reasons why I gravitated towards this, is that I know how hard it is when you're sick to organize your medications, to make follow-up appointments. I mean, when I was that sick, do you think I wanted to be on the phone with the insurance company? No, I didn't. And actually, a lot of times, I just straight up didn't call them when I needed to, because I just could not conceptualize having to do that when I was that sick. And there are so many people in this country, we are an aging population, particularly in Maine, who are very, very sick, and they're chronically sick. And they can't get better. They don't have the resources. They don't have the tools. And what a doctor does, what their job is to diagnose and then dictate. They say, here's your problem. Here's what you do. You give that to a patient. That's not actionable. They can't do that themselves a lot of the time. They need somebody who can work with them and say, yeah, but what's your life situation? How does testing your blood sugar 3 times a day fit into your life? Like, how could you do that? Is there ways that we can support you in doing that? Because doctors don't, as much as I know, because I've worked at the same hospital for quite a few years now, I know that doctors want to do that. They wish they had that much time to sit down. They don't. They really don't have the time. And so, you know, positions like this and part the initiative, like the one that I'm a part of, is trying to bring in this set of staff that can come in and that can set up appointments with patients in the doctor's office, maybe right before or after an appointment with their doctor, and say, let's just talk about this chronic illness. Let's talk about your diabetes. Let's talk about what we can do to help fit into your life, not all diabetics, but you specifically, you with diabetes. How can we fit these things into your life so that you can be healthier? Because eventually what's going to happen is healthier patients, happier doctors, a better healthcare system. And of course, what it all comes down to is less money, less cost for everybody, which is the ultimate goal. And I mean, this came to me in kind of a totally serendipitous way. But I think that, and I guess I can suppose one of the reasons I probably got hired for this is because in my interview, I said, you know, can I tell you a little story about my appendix that tried to kill me?
You've been there. When you talk about your work, you just sound so incredibly passionate about it. I mean, it just sounds like it's really important to you.
It is incredibly important to me. I feel just incredibly lucky to do it at this point in my life. I'm 23. I just turned 23 in April. So to be already doing this work, I mean, I think long term, I hope that someday I could be the CEO of a hospital, that I could drive these programs from the top down. I mean, I would like to in some way really contribute to the reform of healthcare. I mean, I've seen it in other people. I've seen other people struggle, but I've also had that struggle myself. And I had a unique struggle because I was an emancipated minor, that I didn't have the insurance resources. I didn't have the familial resources, and I didn't get the respect or even in some ways the compassion from physicians that maybe I would have had if things had been different in my situation. So for me, it's probably why I'm still here.
So on the other side of this now, can you think of maybe a specific time in your work now where you have talked with a patient or helped somebody through your work, and then it turned out positively, and how you felt about that?
Yeah, I'm still fairly new, but I've had the experience over the last couple of weeks of getting to meet the patients for the first time and really learn their stories. And I think one of the things that I hope that I can bring to this is when I hear somebody talk about their situation, specifically their pain, their struggle throughout a given day, how hard it is for them to do the things that they know that they need to do. They always kind of look to me because they look at the RN who's there, the nurse, and, you know, they're telling her. But then they look over to me, and there's always this little flicker in their eye where they're like, what could she possibly know? Here I am. I'm 85 years old. What are you, 12? Like, how could you know? And there's always a moment where I get to be able to kind of, like, look at them and say, I actually do know where you're coming from. I get it. I get how hard this is. And it's not about it's not that you're not motivated. It's not that you're doing the wrong thing. You can't think about it in those terms. You are presented with something that challenges you from the moment that you get out of bed in the morning until you go to sleep at night. Every decision you make is affected by this because it affects how you feel. And I think that I've been able to say these things to people, like just look in their eyes. And I'm talking people who are even, you know, some of them are only maybe 10 or 20 years older than me. And some of them are like 60 years older than me. And that there's always a moment of recognition where we're looking at each other and I can see that they see in me that I've felt that pain, that I know it. And I've had this happen with other people that I've told this story to in my life, people who look at me and say, God, you're young. You've got your whole life ahead of you. How could you possibly know? How could you possibly have had so much pain in your life already in multiple ways that you know? But once we start talking, there's this moment where it just registers. Like, and I think that anywhere you go in life, in the world, that is, pain is one thing that will always connect people. And to be able to say, I've been there, I get it, I know. You know, when I was sick, that's all I really needed from other people. I just wanted somebody to look at me and say, you're going to get through it. You're going to be okay.
Abby, thank you so much for sharing your story. It just sounds like through all of this pain, you have really found your calling. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I was so thrilled to be here. Thank you.